Let's take stock.
Let's all take a step back.
1 year ago.
Constantly looking backwards.
A well-worn path.
We will chart a new course.
Including energy and healthcare and agriculture and IT.
It's going to be up to you.
Depending on what the results are could depend on what happens next.
I believed then and I believe now.
As part of our coverage of this political year, we're doing a lot of what people in the U.S. are doing as they think about voting for the president. Taking stock of the last 4 years and looking ahead to the next 12 months. For some people, that is a complicated task, complicated by the sense of hope and promise of the Obama presidency on Inauguration Day, colliding with the experience of the last 4 years' hard reality. Among the people with a conflicted sense of this moment is the Reverend Dr. Cynthia L. Hale, who delivered the invocation for the prayer breakfast on the day Barack Obama was inaugurated.
You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in, the word of the Lord. Thanks be to
God. I sat down over the weekend with the Reverend Hale, who is the senior pastor of the Ray of Hope Christian Church in Decatur, Georgia. Hale says that the conversation about race in America may have gotten louder in the last 4 years since Barack Obama was elected, but she doesn't think it's gotten better.
I don't think that it has improved, nor do I believe it's been set back. I think the issue is clearer now than it's ever been. The president was hopeful that we would enter a post-racial time era with his election, and that certainly has not been the case, unfortunately.
Now, is that because there's some resistance, do you think, in America, or that there's something fundamentally difficult about entering this post-racial idea, and that's something that we're all grappling with as Americans?
I think that, quite frankly, people are just being who they've always been. We struggle with embracing things that are different from us and people who are different from us. And so I think that's the major struggle. And so because now we have an African-American president, people are having to look at the head of our country daily and realize this person is different from me, and I'm not comfortable with that. When I was growing up in Roanoke, Virginia is a very interesting town because I didn't even believe that racism existed there. It was very subtle. But when I went further south, it was very clear that racism was alive and well. But in Roanoke, Virginia, so I kind of think the nation is kind of in some ways, in pockets in particular, it's been very subtle, but always there. And then when this glaring reality hit us, I think people just said, no, we're not going to pretend anymore. And what we're seeing is an outbreak of real bigoted attitudes and actions.
How would you describe this chapter in America's racial history? Is it an important chapter that we get this right?
I don't like it, but I'm glad we're in this place. It's like a wound that's been festering, and then there's an open sore, and we can see the pus and the evil or the illness that's there before the healing can come. So I welcome it in some ways. I mean, again, it's not easy to deal with. It's painful. It makes you angry. But I think if we can honestly and openly confront it, we can get beyond some of this and bring some real reconciliation and healing.
Some African-American pastors on our program have said that since the embrace by the president of gay marriage, that he, in particular, had to do a lot of hand-holding in his congregations and among people in his parish and with other ministers as well. How's the conversation gone in your community since that decision?
Well, in my church community, it's been a good conversation because, again, we didn't like it, but we've had to grapple with what we really believe about homosexuality and that lifestyle. When it happened, the day that his interview was aired and I found out about it, I had a leadership conference that night. I went into my leadership conference and I said, you've heard the statement by the president. Want to make clear that we continually affirm the dignity and worth of all persons. The president made a personal decision and choice, and that I believe in marriage between a man and a woman. So my congregation, the leaders, said, Yes, let's talk about it. So we spent the next 45 minutes having an open and honest dialogue about it. And in church, I made the same kind of announcement. People, we couldn't dialogue, but people applauded because it really is who we are as a congregation. Now, I know some other congregations had a different discussion because I've been having discussions with my friends who feel, you know, really upset and betrayed. Their people feel very betrayed by the president, don't understand how he could make such a statement, and have said perhaps they won't even vote for him. And so, again, while I wasn't comfortable with being with our community being outed like that, I think it was necessary to get some helpful dialogue going.
What about the campaign? Has that helped the conversation about who we are as Americans and getting beyond the issues of race and homosexuality for a moment? Certainly the 2008 campaign seemed so big idea filled, even with the bickering among the Democrats before Barack Obama got the nomination. Not so much of the same feeling this time around, but it's the same American democracy. What are the conversations like in your congregation?
Well, a lot of people who I talk to, both in the congregation and beyond, feel like 2008, the campaign was, yes, we can. We can do anything. Nothing is impossible to us. And expectations were really high. And so there now there is some disappointment. Now people are wondering whether or not this president can deliver. And but in the African American community, I think by and large we are forgivers. And we continue to hope against hope. The thing that I fear the most, though, is that there's a sense of apathy. And that people will say, we're just not going to vote. Now, in our congregation and many of the congregations that we have relationships with, we have a very strong effort to get unregistered voters to register, get people out to the polls. So we're already working at that now. We may not like everything. We may not agree with everything the president does. But we believe strongly that the president has made real strides for all of Americans, and particularly for African Americans. And we also believe that the president is not called to be the president of African Americans, but the president of the United States. So we're going to push ahead and see what happens. But we also are very much aware, realistically, that it's going to be tough. It will not be as easy as it was or appeared to be in 2008.
Thinking back on some of the remarks you've made over the last few minutes, I'm wondering if a case can be made that this election may, in some sense, be more important than the election in 2008. If that's the case, why do you think it is?
I think in 2008, we were, as a faith community and as a nation, that we were looking forward with hopeful anticipation and a bit of a Camelot spirit. I think this election is going to be based in the reality with in which we live, and the decisions that will be made will not be made based on hope, but what is the best decision for the here and now and the tough issues that we face as a nation and as a people.
Cynthia Hale, thanks so much. It's always great talking to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
That's the Reverend Dr. Cynthia L. Hale, senior pastor of the Ray of Hope Christian Church in Decatur, Georgia, taking stock. Let us know how you would characterize the last 4 years and what you're looking forward to. Contact us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.